Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Welcome to the Tuesday version of our show. How do you reach us? 312-981-7200. If you can reach us at all. A lot of people say they can't.
Why?
We're unreachable.
We are so reachable.
You can reach us, but you can't teach us. On today's show, Bridget Carey will join us at 10:45 for Tech Tuesday. She'll keep us up to date with what's going on in the world of technology. And then an author named Danny Wallace, who's written a book with a nasty title, Wendy. Can't even say the title on the radio.
F you very much.
Yeah,
I like this. You know, I came upon rudeness several times even before coming to work.
Today?
Yeah, I mean,
people were rude to you today already? It's so early.
I just got to throw something out there. If you're driving and someone has a turn signal on and a lane ends, just let them in.
Yeah?
Just let them in.
It's not a lot to ask.
If everybody who sees a turn signal, I did it four times on the way in, four times, see somebody with a turn signal, I stay back, I flash my lights, I go, you know, with my hand, go ahead, come on. They wave back, everything's good.
You do all that every time? You don't just let them in? Like, because you just, that was a well-choreographed series of events, and you do that each and every time?
I had to do the flash of the lights on Lower Wacker because it was dark, and I don't think he saw me. The other time, I just did the wave, like, go ahead.
Yeah.
But then when I need to merge, no one lets me.
Oh.
Like, four cars go by. Like, you got to do it. So when you see someone with a turn signal, here's a crazy idea. Just let them in right then and there.
It'll only take...
A second.
A second of your time.
Were you merging or cutting?
No, I don't cut. I'm not.
These are legitimate merges.
Yeah.
And no, I come in on the Edens in Kennedy, and there's a place where you go off into the express lanes, and people will come into the last moment and then sort of cut in.
Mm-hmm. I don't like that.
Well, I don't like it either, but it's not worth getting freaked out about, you know, I used to. But now lately, there have been police there pulling people over.
For that?
Yay.
Wait,
yeah,
because, you can pull somebody over for that.
Well, I don't completely understand it, Bill, but there's a period, you know, where there's a double white line, and they've got diagonal lines through it, like where the lanes are splitting.
Right.
You can't drive on that.
And I'm assuming you can't drive over that. And so when people do, I've seen, in the past couple of weeks, I've probably seen three people pulled over.
Oh, how about that?
I didn't know that happens.
I didn't know you could do that for that.
Don't you have somebody who, like, is flashing their brights? Listen, I might have a heavy foot, okay? I'll say that. And if somebody...
Can we go with big boned? Can we just say... Please. Yes.
Is that what led to the whole knee thing?
Yes, I have one big boned foot, and it threw me off.
Freaky.
It is my right foot.
Well, all right.
Sorry.
That's all right.
But when somebody comes behind me and flashes the brights and tailgates me to, like, say, come on, move over, there are a couple things that I want to have happen. One is I want to slam on my brakes. I want to brace myself and slam on my brakes.
You're setting yourself up for a potential collision. You know that.
That's what I mean.
You're okay with that?
Well, just to show him.
Just to teach him a lesson.
And it's usually a him.
It's almost always a him.
Yes. And so I'd like to do that. Or if somebody, like, weaves around me because they're annoyed, I would love for a police officer to be there ready to pounce. But it seems like that never happens except for on the Edens.
Yeah, you're not going to get that. All right, a couple of quick driving questions, especially for the weather conditions we're experiencing now. I understand that the roads are slippery. I get that. They're slippery for me. They're slippery for everybody. But I don't understand the idea of, on a two-lane road, of driving in the middle of the two lanes. I see that a lot this time of year.
Well, in residential areas?
Yeah. Well, not just residential areas, but a lot of my drive on the way in until I get to Lakeshore Drive is two and three lane road, or mostly two lane roadways. And somebody will decide, because it's slippery, I'm just going to drive in the middle of the two lanes. That way, if I do slip or slide, I've got some give, I've got some space. But it makes it impossible to pass
get around
them. You can't pass them. Right?
So there are lanes marked on the street.
Clearly marked.
Okay, then that is 100% wrong.
Yeah.
Stay in the lane.
Right.
Or don't drive.
Right. Agreed. Part two of that is, we were always taught, like when I took driver's ed, that the left lane is the passing lane.
Yep.
Now, we were taught that on highways, but doesn't that apply for wherever you drive, that the left lane is the lane? If you need to go a little faster and pass somebody, left lane. How has that been forgotten by nearly everybody?
Because nobody does that. Slower traffic stays right. That's what we were taught.
Right, should.
And then the left lane is to pass someone, and then you're supposed to get back in the right lane, which I have to tell you, I never do.
I don't either.
I stay in the left lane.
Right.
Because I'm the one passing everybody. Eat my dust is what I say. Or eat my snow in the winter.
Eat my snow. I subscribe to that same periodical.
But technically, you're supposed to pass on the left and then move back to either the middle or right lane.
All right. So how do people not, like, you know it and I know it, and I know we weren't the only two people taking driver's ed. The room was full when I took it. So how do people not know it? And then if you do get in the left lane and either honk, flash your brights, or motion to them, they look at you like you're from another planet. They have no idea what you're trying to convey to them.
Well, you shouldn't really honk, flash your brights, or motion to them. That, I think, is wrong.
Okay.
So I really don't
I have
think
a poster board printed up and just hold it out the window?
No,
saying,
I don't think you have the right to do that.
Can I jump in on this controversy?
Please, yes. Mary.
Oh, I wasn't talking about
Mary,
that. I have a traffic
situation. So
I have a traffic situation.
Oh, okay.
Perfect timing.
Right.
No, but it's not related to passing. Oh. Southbound Tri-State, there's a big car fire at Illinois 21, which is Milwaukee Avenue, and all lanes are blocked.
All right.
Yeah, so.
Thank you, Mary.
But keep going.
All right.
All right. Well, I want to ask a question. I know that, you know, if you're behind someone who's going slow, you're trying to give them a message like, get out of my way. But
right.
I don't know that that's legal.
What, to sit
to
on them, you mean?
Like,
to
flash
them,
your brights or to honk or to tailgate
them? I think that's so rude.
I don't think that's legal. I don't
know.
I don't know how else to let them know
you, you have to deal with it.
Yeah.
You have to be patient and wait till they see you.
Or pass them on the right, I know, which is illegal, but...
And then is it okay to give them a look like, hey, you're supposed to be in this lane, I'm supposed to be in that lane, you know it and I know it.
You do whatever you want, but people get shot for less now.
Oh. Right.
I wouldn't flash my brights to anyone other than I did this morning on Lower Wacker to go, come on in, merge,
so a
merge.
Friendly, you said it in Italian? You told them to merge in Italian?
Yes.
So a friendly flash, always fine. An impolite flash, you should not do. You get shot.
You decide what you want, but I'm very nice now because... You know, in the old days, you could flip someone off and someone would flip you off.
Not any,
bigger.
And then it was done.
It was done.
I flipped off, he flipped off, everybody got it out of the way. Now you can't do it anymore.
Although there were two instances where I flipped someone off and they followed me. I'm not kidding.
Did they really?
Yeah, and one of them...
To what end?
How
would that end?
Well, I've been known to... God, this was an old boyfriend. We were driving on the southwest side, and some guy was behind us flashing their brights, kind of like, maybe it was you.
It might have been me.
Oak Forest wasn't too far from where I was.
Did he have a lunchbox?
Yes.
And a beanie?
Uh-huh.
That was me.
All right, so someone was doing that, and of course, I was the passenger, and I'm the girl, so I did like a big animated flip you off.
Nice.
And then
when you say animated, which version? Because I picture you doing the one where you're cranking...
No.
Like a jack in the box, and then the jack in the box ends up being your finger. That's the one I'm imagining.
I did like a double.
Oh, you did oh.
I did a double.
Serious.
And I might have had some, you know, not gang signals, because I don't know any, but I'm Italian, so I might have moved my hands. And all I know is this guy started following us, like at high speeds, and my old boyfriend at the time was smart and drove to a police station and pulled in.
Oh.
Did he break up with you after that?
Yep.
That was the end.
That would
no more of this.
And then one time I was taking my kid to daycare, somebody in a Hummer cut me off, and I flipped him off.
Yeah.
And then he started following me, like, at really high speeds. I got a kid in the car seat in the back, and I didn't know what to do. And we were in, like, this little cul-de-sac.
Uh-huh.
And I kept kind of going around as quickly as I could and trying to turn off. And then finally, I pulled in someone's driveway.
And that was as far as he was concerned, it's like, well, what can I do now?
She's in a home.
She's in a driveway. I lost.
I think he presumed, oh, she's home.
Oh.
But then I felt really bad. Like, what if this Hummer guy comes and attacks the people who live there? But nothing happened.
What would you have done if the next day you read in the news that the people in that house...
I would have come forward and said it is totally my fault.
Police are struggling to find a motive.
You know me. I would have completely confessed.
I think you would have.
I got bumped once at like Damon and Fullerton.
Just
for what reason?
I didn't do it on purpose. I didn't realize it at the time, but clearly the guy behind me thought I'd taking a left turn in front of him.
Oh, no.
So he was like right on me with his flashers and doing all this stuff. And really, I didn't think I was doing anything. And so he came to the stoplight and he just kept easing up until he nudged my car.
Ugh. Did you file a report of some sort?
No.
You got out of there.
What are you going to do? Some knucklehead nudge my car?
Yeah.
I mean,
Wow.
There was another time that I might have done something, too.
Might have, maybe, possibly.
How many signals did this involve?
Wait, can we do a quick break? And
yeah.
Then, all right. Wendy will share another interesting adventure.
Yeah, I might be the problem of everybody.
Do you have some? We're 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. That's coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Later in the show, Danny Wallace joins us. Danny has written a book called F You Very Much, the Understanding the Culture of Rudeness and What We Can Do About It. We're telling stories about rudeness. For some reason, it seems like most stories of rudeness deal with cars. I don't know why. Or the internet, too.
Yeah. Although that's easier to be rude to someone anonymously.
Well, you're kind of shielding yourself in both those instances. In a car, you're obviously in a car, so there's your shield. And on the internet, it's anonymity, so...
Yeah, unless a guy with a Hummer is after you,
unless
and you're
the
in
a
little
with a Hummer.
Tiny Honda.
So we have learned that many of these instances of rudeness involve
me.
You. Yeah.
All right, well, no, it wasn't really rude. I mean, they were the rude ones. They were chasing us.
Right.
And just because
I'm on your
side. I flipped
them
off.
Right.
This third thing happened many, many years ago. I was working overnights at the Loop radio station, and I was coming home at like 5 a.m, and it was really treacherous on the outbound Stevenson, very snowy.
Mm-hmm.
And there was someone who was, I was in the right lane minding my own business. It was really snowy, so I was 10 and 2 position,
mm-hmm.
trying to stay in my lane,
mm-hmm.
blowing and drifting snow all over the place. You could barely see the lane marker, so I'm just minding my own business. And this guy behind me is doing the flashing the brights thing.
In the right-hand lane?
Yeah. I'm not even kidding.
Why would he do that?
Because it was snowing so badly that there was really one lane. You know what I mean? You know how that happens?
Yeah, sure.
And then you people who are a little afraid, I was a fraidy cat, I stayed in the right lane.
That's the word I always use to describe you, by the way. Whenever people go, what's she like? I go, well, she's a fraidy cat.
I was in this particular incident, and, you know, it was still dark out. It was like 5 a.m. or something,
uh-huh.
or still dark out, and I'm by myself. So I'm just minding my own stinking business.
Yes.
This guy's flashing his brights, and I'm like, you know what? If you want to pass me, you venture out into the snowy left lane and pass me.
Seems fair.
It does seem fair.
Mm-hmm.
So he's flashing his brights, and now he's honking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, now I'm getting really nervous.
Are you sure you didn't have a baby on your roof or something?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I was
not
single.
Not this time, Steve.
So I'm driving, and then I'm like, you know what? Screw you. So I kind of tapped on my brakes.
Oh.
And it was pretty snowy and icy, and that caused him to hit his brakes, too, because he was totally tailgating me.
Yeah.
And he spun out into the ditch and over into the right shoulder,
uh-oh.
And I didn't know what to do. So I called 911 and I said, there's a spin out on I-55 right below outbound 55 near Pulaski. And
did you say you may
I said,
have had a hand in
well,
this?
Well, not at that point.
No.
I said that I just noticed it and perhaps you should send a car there.
Yeah.
So then I got home and I called 911 again and I said, funny thing, I reported an accident about 20 minutes ago.
Funny thing.
They always hear that.
Just so happened.
They're so used to hearing that at the beginning of a phone call. Funny thing.
I said, I reported an accident about 20 minutes ago on the outbound Stevenson at Pulaski.
Yes.
And I wanted to make sure that the person was okay.
Wow.
And they said, hang on. And then they check and they go, yeah, we dispatched a car out there and there was no one on the shoulder. So evidently he
was able to figure out how to get back on the road.
And it's like a movie. And he's in my driveway.
The calls are coming from inside the house.
No. And I just said, I can't just shut up and say thank you. So then I'm like, well, I just wanted to make sure he was okay. Because
I'm on the loop. Listen to me on the loop.
No,
I'm on 7-11
God,
on
no,
loop.
I didn't want to identify myself. But I said, I may
this
have
is Terry
caused
Ryder,
that.
Just in case there's any problems later on.
Wait, so you went home, you called 911 again.
Yeah.
And then you confessed to
call. And so I said,
when you call 911, they have your phone number.
Forever.
Yeah, I didn't really think of that. I just wanted to make sure the person was okay because I had some
you're
guilt.
Guilty. You're a giver.
Yeah.
And so I said, I may have caused that. I said, this guy was behind me. The it was very treacherous on the way out, and he was really tailgating me and honking and flashing his brights. So I tapped my brake, and then there's some silence, and then the dispatcher goes, If he had time to honk, then he had time to maneuver to get out of the way. So I wouldn't worry about it. I said, "Are you sure?" And then
if you ever run for office, they're going to use these tapes like the Pritzker ads.
Oh, I know.
Where it's him and Blagojevich. It's going to be you and the person at 911.
So then my sister.
Would you vote for Wendy Snyder? She causes people to spin out on highways, on snowy highways.
My sister's an attorney. And, you know, later that morning, I called and said, "Oh, Betsy, I did the dumbest thing, you know." And she goes, "What are you? Why are you offering this information?"
Right. She's right.
I'm like, I felt bad.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. The author again of I know it seems.
Wait,
are you
Catholic?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just a little. Just a little.
Funny thing.
I have a funny thing to tell you.
Funny thing. I don't go to church as much as I should, Father. But I think I might have gone to confession.
Father, Father, dispatcher, whatever counts.
Anything, anything. All right, a quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, you just said something that rings very, very true to me.
Uh-oh, what did I say?
Share it with the class. You had your sad Wendy face on.
Oh, I feel really bad about actor John Mahoney, hearing about his passing at the age of 77.
Yeah.
Not old enough. And he just started his career late. He had more years left in him.
He didn't start acting till he was 40.
I know.
He started acting at 40, and you saw the results. I mean, he was
really
a great
good.
Stage actor, a great movie and television actor, and aside from being a great stage and film and television actor, I don't know if you ever had the honor to meet him, but boy, was he a nice man.
Yep. You know, I'm just glad you said that. I interviewed him once for, he just did a little independent film about James Dean.
Really?
Yeah, maybe, about the night Dean died or something like that. But we had the nicest, he was just a wonderful guy to talk to.
Yes. A lot of times when these guys come in, they put on their I have to do a radio interview face, and not John Mahoney. I had him on at WLS when I was there, and he came in and was just so appreciative and so funny and just a warm, nice guy.
Seemed genuine.
Yeah,
he did seem genuine, and I have not heard a bad thing.
No, impossible. I can't. The role that he played on Frasier, he played Martin Crane, the father of the Crane boys. Disappointed in the fact that he didn't have the kind of sons that he always dreamed of having.
Which was a great character.
Yeah,
wasn't
it?
Really, truly.
But I have a hard time imagining anyone else. I think this is the sign of a great actor or actress sometimes is when you say to yourself, who else could have played that so well? I can't think of anybody that would have pulled that off as masterfully as John Mahoney did.
He was great in that hideous chair he always sat on. You know, I know Frasier kept it because the dad liked it, but it was just that striped gold and avocado and 70s bad chair.
Right.
I always think of that.
A lot of great film roles. You can go down his IMDb page and take a look at one after another, but the one I always thought was his best, was playing I Own Sky's dad in Say Anything.
Yeah.
He really genuinely loved his daughter and would do anything for her. And then we find out that some of the things that he did for her were not nice. You know?
I do remember that.
And he played it wonderfully. He was really strong in that. So very sad news that we have lost John Mahoney after what they said was an extended illness.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard anything about it until we found out the sad news he had died yesterday.
I wanted more information on that, but I don't have it.
In other show business news, if I may, one of the ads that they showed during the Super Bowl was for a movie coming out that I was sure was a remake of Die Hard. It's Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and he's running all around a giant building, a tall building, trying to catch bad guys who have his family. And I go, oh, they've already remade Die Hard. How did that happen so quick? But they didn't. It's a movie called Skyscraper, which is similar to Die Hard, but I guess it's different somehow. I'm not sure how.
This has a little Towering Inferno in it, too, or no?
I don't think it ever catches... They don't show it ever catch on fire. And if they did, you can't blame it on Crock-Pot this time, Wendy. Good luck to you. You can't pull that off again. But it's his family is somehow being held hostage in this giant skyscraper, and he does everything he can to find them and get them out, of course. So in the ad, they show... And the reason I'm bringing this up is that there's some trouble with the movie poster for the movie. He's on a giant crane that's across the street from a skyscraper, the skyscraper where his family's being held, and he jumps from the crane an incredibly long distance into one of the open windows of the skyscraper.
That could happen.
Well, in the poster, they show it. You know, it's a still photograph of crane here, long distance here, Dwayne The Rock Johnson in the middle, airborne, and then the open window. And then all these people who understand things like this say the chances of making that jump are 0%. You can't possibly. They show all kinds of what they call parabolas, where they show the distance and the speed, and there's no possible way he could do it. So people are already angry about the movie. I think you almost have to suspend belief. You're going to see a movie like this anyway.
Well,
you have to it's not going to really happen.
All right. First of
people are furious. Don't insult our intelligence in telling us that Dwayne The Rock Johnson can fly a block into an open window.
I would have never thought in a million years that he'd be able to do it.
Right.
But it's a movie.
Right. I know that.
And he's The Rock.
Well, you've criticized me in the past because I have ruined some very good movies for myself because there will be a glitch in the storyline and I'll go, oh, that's fake. And then all of a sudden, I'm bitter because that wouldn't have happened. That seal wouldn't have fallen in love with a trainer. That's impossible. But with this one, like, there's a guy who shows all the different angles, and he goes, "Look, if he ran at 60 miles an hour, he couldn't have made that jump."
There's no way he would. I mean, you look at it once and go, "Yeah, that's a stretch," and then you go about your business.
Right. You say, if I'm watching a movie like this, things like this are going to happen. I'll play by your rules. But again, if anyone could make that jump, it would be Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the world's most highly paid actor.
Which really still shocks me.
I know.
And it surprises me.
The highest paid actor, I pointed this out before, if he's the highest paid actor today, that means he's the highest paid actor of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson is the highest paid actor ever.
Well, and
take
everyone,
that Daniel Day-Lewis.
I'm not a huge fan of his. I could take him or leave him. I don't dislike him.
Right.
But I don't love him. But anytime I say anything negative to anyone, they're like, how could you not like The Rock?
Right. Well, I like how he just escapes into whatever role he's playing. He always plays a different character.
Best actor.
He is. And boy, can he jump. That's the most important thing in acting, is how far you can jump.
So ridiculous.
Lord Olivier. That guy, he was a good actor, but when you saw him jump,
not a good jumper.
Could have been better. All right, we'll take a quick break and then we'll check in with Bridget Carey from CNET and find out what's going in the world of tech. But first, you spend a third of your life in your sheets. You know that. That's a long time. Start getting better sleep with better sheets. Of course, I'm referring to brooklinen.com, the highest quality sheets. There's no big markup with Brooklinen. Brooklinen's philosophy is a very simple one. Beautiful home essentials, but no crazy prices. Most bedding is marked up, ready? 300%, but not Brooklinen. Brooklinen is the fastest growing bedding brand in the whole world. Brooklinen sheets were named the winner of the best of online bedding by Good Housekeeping. This is luxury bedding, and it's underpriced, grossly underpriced, if you ask me. You have to try these sheets today. I love my Brooklinen sheets. They sent me some a couple of weeks ago. I'm sleeping like a baby. Brooklinen has an offer just for our listeners.
You are a baby.
Well, this explains the drooling, doesn't it, Wendy? Get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code Bill. That's my name, Bill, at brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident they're going to offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping, though, is to use that promo code Bill at brooklinen.com. Brooklinen, spelled the way you think, BROOKLINEN.com. The promo code is Bill. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever.
And we will take a break. Bridget Carey coming up, but a listener just pointed out that there is a fire on the tower, so it is Towering Inferno.
Oh, it is Towering Inferno. Okay, good.
Just wanted to let you know.
Sold some tickets there.
It is a Tech Tuesday.
That snuck up on you, didn't it, Wendy?
Yeah, you and I were just sitting there talking, you know, hey, I wonder what Bridget's going to talk about today. And then all of a sudden we heard the music, and there she is, Bridget Carey, CNET Senior Editor. And let's talk tech. Bridget, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Still surviving all the latest tech nonsense.
Well, your top story today, Bridget, is something I read about this morning, and I was hoping you'd want to discuss it. And this is something that I believe is going to be introduced very, very soon, if not already, and that's called the HomePod from Apple, right?
Yeah, so our review of it is out. It actually lands at stores on Friday for those who pre-ordered. They'll be getting them in the mail. So this is their version of the smart speaker, you know, because Apple is so late to the game. We've all had the Amazon and Google ones out for a while. And we, you know, put it through its paces and detail it and even show you some videos where you compare, like, how it is to talk to Siri or Alexa. But the bottom line, this HomePod, aside from being extremely expensive at $350, it is useless to you unless you have an iPhone. So don't think of this as a really cool Bluetooth speaker that you can get for anybody. This is designed to only stream from Apple Music, or if you have Spotify, you kind of have to use your phone to beam it over there. But unlike other Bluetooth speakers, you can't just beam anything for it to play.
So if you have Alexa, you can use that with Android or iPhone, and this you can only use with an iPhone. To me, that is not a good selling point.
Everyone, I say everyone, all these big tech companies, they're really starting to kind of put up their walls, so to speak, on like, hey, you know, we really want you to only be in our little playground of Apple or Google. I mean, just recently, Amazon can no longer play YouTube videos on their, like, screen version of their Echo smart speaker because Google, you know, wants to have their YouTube, you know, on theirs. So suddenly, you know, it's becoming this world of you better choose who you want to play with. Now, with Apple, they have a couple challenges ahead. They've always kind of marketed this because they're late to the game as, oh, this is really for people who love sound. You know, this is really about sound. It's not really so much about the assistant. Well, that's because their assistant, you know, has as much time in the field as the other ones. And so they know that. But still, going forward, this is, all these things evolve the longer they're out.
It seems like a risky proposition, though, to just put up a parameter like that. Like, this will only work with our equipment, nobody else. That's quite a gamble, isn't it?
Well, that's what Apple likes to do best, right? Yeah. You have all your special dongles and your special connections, and you know, and they know you're gonna, if you already, you know, have, you know, the Apple Music, you know, ecosystem, you're gonna do that. In fact, what's interesting is that news just came out that Apple's music streaming service, it is ahead of Spotify, at least in the U.S. So, you know, the people who have iPhones, you know, they are, you know, using that more than Spotify, which is interesting. And Apple's music service is available on Android phones, too, I should say. But it shows that more people are thinking about, you know, other things besides just Spotify or Pandora or whatever you use.
All right. Now, the sales of the latest iPhone model are terrible. So what is that going to mean for us? Could I wait now and buy one at a less expensive price?
Terrible if in comparison, I mean, they still sell boatloads and boatloads of iPhones, right? You know, but the big headline was, oh my gosh, for the first time in a holiday, Apple didn't sell more than they did the last previous year. So Apple doesn't break down the numbers of how many iPhone 10s versus how many iPhone 8s they sold, but they sold 1% less, 1% of like 78.
No reason to panic.
Oh, all right. I panicked.
No, Wendy panicked.
But will it be cheaper? I don't think so. It doesn't look like that. It looks like whenever the next model comes out, they'll have something else to sell you. And I don't think, at least the rumor is, they're not going to have a discounted version of their high-end 10. But people are complaining about the 10. Have you heard about how there could be some glitches that they're looking into when it comes to phone calls? Some people are experiencing lag, a delay in trying to answer a phone call, which is, you know, the main part of a phone. So, you know, Apple might have some fixing to do with a couple things that, you know, they always rush to be so high tech with certain things, but it doesn't look good for them in PR. Even if it's just a handful of people who are complaining, you know, it might not be a widespread bug, but it's something that is definitely making news and doesn't look good.
I have to say, the Apple iPhone is pretty easy to use. I've always been a PC person, but I did break down and bought an Apple MacBook a couple years ago because I thought, I have an iPad, I have an iPhone, they can all work together. It is pretty easy to use. And I think the big test to this is, Bill Leff, you now have an iPhone. Tell me that isn't 100 times easier to use than that stupid Windows Tile phone that you had.
It's easy. It's not 100 times. It's easier, but I still, on an almost daily basis, there's something that's still throws me that I
but,
can't do.
Bridget, he now answers texts, which is really bizarre because you would text him things before and I don't even know if he'd get them because the window wouldn't pop up.
I would send you a note. I would send you a telegram every time Wendy texted me. I'd send her a telegram back.
But I get texts back from him and it includes sometimes more than one person. He is getting tech savvy.
Yeah.
I am proud of your progress, Bill.
Thanks.
But I would say stay away from the iPhone 10 then because one of the big complaints I'm hearing about is that so much changed with the 10. Like our reviewers even say, Apple's losing its really easy to understand touch.
That whole intuitive
design. Some things are just moved on the 10 that aren't moved on the iPhone 8 or 7. You know, so I think for the sake of trying to get rid of the home button, there's a few things that you do kind of have to go, wait, how do I get to that menu? And the more they add, the more that's going to keep happening. So what's intuitive today might not be there tomorrow.
All right.
And the people who are behind technology and computers are now kind of lobbying to fight the addiction to technology. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that was something that happened the other day where there is a new coalition, a group of former Facebook and former Google and other Silicon Valley employees who've come together to say, hey, there's a problem. We're addicted, and they're out to lobby all these tech companies from Facebook to Apple to say we need to kind of have more ethics in how we're designing these things because our children's minds are at stake, our society is at stake because we're all acting differently. So they, you know, presented all this, all these facts and studies that have been out about how our behaviors change. And they're saying because they're former employees, they're saying, hey, we came from Facebook. You know, they're designed to keep you clicking, to keep you hitting that next like, watch that next video, you know, just keep you hooked for hours. You don't even know why you're scrolling. And they're saying that, you know, that's because it's an advertising-based, you know, social media. You know, like Twitter, YouTube, they're all the same. They all want to do things to make your lizard brain keep clicking, and you don't even know why. And so this is really just a call for ethics. They want to lobby Apple. They want to lobby Samsung and say, hey, you're the phone makers. You don't care what we're clicking on. You just care that we buy the phone, right? So why don't you install some more protections to help us control our screen time more, help us make the screen itself less addicting, help us maybe not have to look at a screen all day because you just care if we buy the thing. You don't care what we do with it. And also they're lobbying the government just to put more consumer protections in place that, you know, kind of raise this conversation. And they're also going to be putting campaigns out in schools, just like the Truth Anti-Smoking campaigns. You're going to start seeing the truth about tech as a campaign.
Bridget, do you think when Zuckerberg came up with the original idea for Facebook, he saw it as the cash cow that it ended up being, or do you think that just happened?
I think it definitely went beyond what it used to be. You know, Facebook might have been something nice where you get to communicate with your friends. I was on it the first year when I was back in college, but this thing is just an advertising machine. And this morning on CBS, there was actually an executive from Facebook being interviewed at the roundtable, and they kept pressing her, hey, this is an advertising machine. Are you going to do anything about it? Because nothing will change if your end goal is to still get more eyeballs and more clicks. You're not going to change this addiction we have to tech. And they're really kind of sidestepping with the answer, going, well, it benefits us if we, you know, try to show that we care. You know, they kept saying they put money into researching it, but I see a lot of push into these blog posts that Facebook makes, going, you know, we really care. We really care.
Oh, so yeah, right.
I don't know how much they're going to do to change it, and it's up to us. It's up to us in how we use our devices and teach our kids.
It'll never work. We're doomed.
Glum said that on Gulliver's Travels, didn't he, Wendy?
Yes,
he was right. The character Glum.
Bridget, thank you very much.
Always happy to tell you about how we're doomed. No problem.
Yay. Thanks, Bridget.
She is Bridget Carey, senior editor from CNET. You can find her and a bunch of things at CNET.com. And Tech Tuesday is sponsored by Illinois Tech Stewart School of Business. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And earlier today, we were talking about this book, F You Very Much, Understanding the Culture of Rudeness and What We Can Do About It. And on the line with us right now is the author of that book, Danny Wallace. He's not now.
No, he's not now, Wendy. He's later.
So you just let me do that?
Yep. I thought it was great.
You're a jerk.
I thought it was masterful.
I thought he was on right now.
No, he's on later on.
I'm blown away that he's written for GQ, Elle Magazine. One of his books, Yes Man, was made into a Jim Carrey movie of the same name.
Yeah.
I was very excited to talk to
him.
Well,
he'll be on later.
You're a jerk. All right.
I'm just setting up the interview about the Book of Rudeness by being rude and
I'm sorry. I thought it was here. I'm anxious. All right. Well, I got nothing then. Come on. Your
right,
turn.
A couple of stories. Story number one.
You thought it was here, too.
No. Later on. 11:35.
You thought it was here because you would have had something ready. Jasmine, he thought it was here, too.
No, I knew it was later. 11:35. It's a half an hour away, Wendy. You're running off
it's
by a lot.
It's not even a half an hour.
You're only off by a little bit. It turns out that...
Boy, just wait. The next time you need help, I am so not going to be there for you. I am not throwing you a lifeline. I'm
what?
Not throwing you a jump rope.
Oh, come on.
I'll throw you one of those stars.
Ninja star?
Yes. That's what I'll throw you.
I will accept that ninja star. Proudly. Very proudly. All right. Story number one. I have 11 of them.
Okay.
Story number one. Melania Trump, the real Melania Trump, that's the first lady.
Right.
You've seen
her. As opposed to the not real one?
Right. There's other ladies, but she is the first lady, Melania Trump. It turns out she likes the way she is portrayed on Saturday Night Live. Cecily Strong plays her in
does
the
scenes.
Does
a good job.
Yeah, it does a very credible job of playing Melania Trump. But still, because it's Saturday Night Live, they are, of course, poking fun at her.
They're poking fun at her not loving being married to the Donald.
That's what you just said is the key to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's why she likes this, do you think?
Well, you and I discussed this during the stream portion of the show yesterday, in that a lot has gone on with Mr. Trump over the last couple of years that maybe Melania was not expecting. I'm sure when they met, she didn't think, as many of us didn't, that he would one day be the president of the United States. I'm sure that if somebody would have suggested to her when they first met that one day that guy would be the president, she would probably go, I think you're wrong.
Right.
Right.
Also, if I had a baby and my husband was out with stormy weather.
Stormy Daniels.
All right. That wouldn't make me very happy
right,
either.
Right.
Like at all.
There have been a couple of incidents of late that may have added a little more friction to the relationship that the Trumps have.
What's wrong with
the
you?
The Trumps. So on Saturday Night Live, of course, their job is to mirror whatever's going on and to take their own take on it. But she's pleased with it. She says that the job that Cecily Strong is doing is good. At least one member of the Trump family, it says here, is being parodied for the honor that it truly is. Melania Trump, who reportedly enjoys her impression that is done by Cecily Strong, appeared on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Strong revealed that Melania attended a dinner with Lorne Michaels. He's the producer of Saturday Night Live. And the cast the week that Trump hosted the show. And while she didn't say anything directly, she pointed at me when she walked in. And then Donald told Cecily that Melania enjoyed her impression. She's also heard through the grapevine that Melania watches the show and that she likes the show. Now, this is the more important part of the story. This is the reason I brought this up. If you're Donald Trump and you do like attention, and he does, right, and you know that you are constant fodder on every single one of the talk shows, no matter which talk show you're going to at 10:30, they're making fun of you. And then the weekend comes and you have Saturday Night Live and John Oliver and they're making fun of you and Bill Maher. What do you do with that? Do you not? If you're Donald Trump, do you say, well, I'm not going to watch any of the 10:30 shows because they're ripping into me. I'm not going to watch Bill Maher or John Oliver or Saturday Night Live because they're making fun of me. Or do you just go, well, let's see what they're doing?
I think he can't stand the suspense and needs to see what they're doing.
Interesting.
Because, see, I know that the old saying is, what is the negative press? What's the
no
thing?
Such thing as bad publicity.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But there is.
Well, yeah, there always is.
And he likes to be the center of attention. I get that because I'm a little like that, too. I like attention.
Yeah.
But if it's bad attention, you don't want that. And it's pretty bad.
I think because of the way I'll say sense of humor because that's what most people have. But the way his sense of humor, quote unquote, works is that when anyone's making fun, like they made fun of Barack Obama. They had guys playing Barack Obama on Saturday Night Live. And through the whole 40-year career of Saturday Night Live, whoever the president has been, that's been a constant on the show.
That's what they do.
Somebody's making fun of you.
Poor Gerald Ford falling all the time.
Every week, Gerald Ford. And in real life, he did have an incident or two where he bumped his head. But he wasn't the proverbial klutz that he was painted as on Saturday Night Live. So you could look at that and go, okay, that's their job. I'm trying to do mine. They're doing theirs, and their job is to make fun of me.
And exaggerate.
But I don't think Trump sees it that way. I think he sees it as a personal attack more than a lampoon of what he's doing, don't you?
Well, yeah, because he doesn't think he's doing anything wrong, so no one should be making fun of him.
Right.
They should be, you know, giving him accolades and saying he's the best.
Right. But you know, if you're him, more weeks than not, the show's going to open with Alec Baldwin playing you in a negative way, and then the Weekend Update will come later on, and they're going to do a couple of jokes at your suspense. So you can't just isolate yourself and live in a bubble and go, well, I'm not going to watch anything that's going to make fun of me. He's got to see some of it, doesn't he?
Well, if Melania likes it and is watching it, she tells him.
In her bedroom.
It's on in her bedroom.
I don't know what's on in his bedroom.
But now, is this current where she says she currently watches it, or this was a while ago?
They're alluding to last year, well, right before the election when he came on and hosted. But I don't remember her, Cecily Strong, playing Melania in more than one. There was one scene that I remember her being in, and it's possible there were more, but I don't think that she played it a lot until he won the presidency, and then it became a bigger deal on the show. She's a good Melania. Yeah. I'm trying to remember which of the late night shows. I want to say it's Jimmy Fallon. They have an actress who looks exactly like her, and they bring her out from time to time, and they do it. They did it one with her last week. I want to say it's Colbert. It's Colbert's show.
It seems more like him.
They cut to an actress who looks exactly like, I mean, you couldn't look more like Melania Trump than this woman does.
Jimmy Fallon's too busy with the This Is Us people.
She does do a lot with them.
Man, he gets to do a lot of cool things.
He does do a lot with them. It's an NBC tie-in, so they give him full
Super
access.
Super Bowl and...
I know.
Introducing Justin Timberlake.
Yep.
He's getting all the cool things. He's front and center.
All right, let's do a quick break, and then there's more show. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill, it's Wendy, and we were talking about Melania Trump is a fan of Saturday Night Live.
Well, of the way she's portrayed, apparently, on the show.
Didn't it say in there that she watches it? I thought it said
she watches it. She enjoys it.
I just really
She watches Man of the People at 10 with Pat Tomasulo. And then she says to Donald, Saturdays will never be the same. And then at 10:30, she watches Saturday Night Live. And then after Saturday Night Live, she watches that show with the girl who learns to do things like pogo sticking. Did you ever see that show? It's on Channel 5 after Saturday Night Live.
No.
There's some girl and she goes to exotic places and then they teach her how to firewalk or do yo-yo tricks.
Really?
It's ridiculous.
I'm missing something every week
as I'm watching this, I say to myself, why am I watching this? That girl does stuff every... And now she's been replaced by a guy who does the exact same things. I don't know if the girl had a mishap with a yo-yo or firewalking.
That would be bad.
But now there's a guy, and he does all those same... They send him all over the globe, and then he does it. Today we're in Botswana learning how to make felt animals. And I'm just sitting there going, I got to watch something else. This isn't good. Yep.
I don't know the name of that show.
And I don't know what it is either. It's on right after Saturday Night Live. And it's another, you know, I understand the time when you had to physically get up and walk to your TV and move a switch to change channels, but I've got a controller in my hand and I'm still like, I'll give this 3 more minutes.
That's why Two Broke Girls is still popular. There was one time it was on, and again, although remotes have gotten a little more complicated lately.
But you still know how to do channel up and channel down. That's the frustrating thing. I know.
Garrett Morris was on Two Broke Girls.
Yeah.
So, I would watch it, yep. And then I'd sit there and scratch my head and go, this show is really not funny. Why is it like in syndication and on bus boards everywhere?
They don't call it Two Funny Girls.
No.
It's Two Broke Girls.
How is that still on?
It's not anymore.
But
it ended last year.
How many seasons did they do of it?
Like 6 or 7.
Wow.
And I don't know if they got more or less broke by the end of it. I have no idea.
They weren't that broke. I was...
You wanted them to be more broke.
Yeah.
Two destitute girls.
Yep.
That would have been a good show.
I'm trying to find the name of that show. I'm sorry.
It's on Channel 5 at midnight on Saturdays. I have no idea what it's called. I've seen it like 30 times, and it's always kind of the same. They just send this girl to exotic locations, and they teach her how to do stuff. And she does a lot of takes to the camera.
Well, it's not going to be on for a while because the Winter Olympics will be on.
I know.
I'm kind
All
of
your
excited.
Favorite NBC shows are on the shelf for like 3 weeks. It's going to be tough.
Is This Is Us? Are they going to be at the Olympics?
No. No. In any of their timelines. Mm. They will not. Did you see this guy in Virginia who... Now, this I cannot explain. You know how every once in a while we'll have a magician on the show and then...
I love them. And you try to figure out their tricks and then you reveal it to me after they've left.
Right.
I love magicians.
I have a very high track record. You always go... That guy just did that, and I go, well, here's how he did it.
You wreck it all the time.
I do wreck it, but I always give you the option. I go, if you don't want me to tell you, but then I tell you anyway. All right, so this, I don't know how this man pulled this off. A man in Virginia won the lottery by picking numbers that he dreamt the night before. How is that possible? How could you do that?
I don't know.
That's astounding.
He's lying.
Why? No, it's on the internet. You can't lie on the internet. Some dreams, this is from Huffington Post, some dreams really do come true. A Virginia man followed his dreams, and it led him right to a six-figure lottery jackpot. Victor Amoli dreamed about the numbers 3, 10, 17, 26, 32, and when he woke, he used them in 4 identical Cash 5 tickets. Now, does that imply that he bought 4 tickets with all the same numbers?
Well, it says identical, doesn't it?
Yeah. Why would he do that?
You are the one who said that somebody told you to do that so you don't split the pot.
Someone I used to work with, whenever he would play the lottery, would play the same numbers twice because he goes, if I'm going to split the jackpot with anybody, I'm going to split it with me. And I'd go, no, it doesn't work that way. If you're going to be the only winner, you don't have to buy that second ticket. You just have it. You have one ticket with the numbers.
I don't understand people doing that, but I mean, really, when you think about it, if he bought 4 tickets with the same numbers instead of 1, what is he out? An extra $3 or something? So who cares?
But he would have won the same amount of money.
Yeah, but it's only $3.
It's only $3. But you're hurting your odds there.
I don't understand
odds. Play different numbers.
Yeah,
your odds are so much smarter if you play different numbers. But this guy won and I didn't, so what am I doing?
Exactly. And you remember your dreams and you can control your dreams.
Right.
I know when
I'm in a dream. Almost always. Not always, but almost always. Like whatever's happening in the dream, I go, well, it's just a dream.
Why should I, even though I can't scream, I don't care because it's a dream. Is that what you say?
I say that in the dream, yeah.
Or I'm trying to run, but I'm getting nowhere, but I don't have to worry because it's a dream.
Nothing's going to happen.
I'm just dreaming that there's a dragon chasing me. Yeah. Look, I can't scream.
You have dream jealousy. You're jealous of my dreams.
I do. I love
I know
to
I'm
dream.
In a dream and you don't.
I don't know. Am I dreaming right now?
No, this is real. Here's what he says. These are the words of Victor Amoli. I'm just relaying them to you. I've never had a dream like that before, the computer programmer told the Virginia Lottery. The numbers hit, making all 4 ticket winners of the $100,000 top prize and earned him $400,000. This took place on January 13th. Amoli says he plans to invest his winnings. Now, I would have a second dream before I did anything. I'd go, well, my dreams are paying off. Let me have a dream about what to do with the money and take it from there. I wouldn't jump to any conclusions. He's on a dream streak. Don't ruin it, Victor. According to the Virginia State Lottery website, the odds of winning the Cash 5 game are 1 in 278,256. So this guy just has a random dream. The numbers show up in his dream. He plays them and he wins.
And someone said when you buy multiple tickets, 219 says, Bill, you're hurting your chances, not your odds.
That's true. I said odds, but it's you're hurting your... Well, it's kind of both, but chances is the better word.
All right. And then 219 about 2 broke girls says, you have no sense of humor, Wendy. That is a funny show.
Yeah.
Not always, but it is funny.
All right.
2 broke girls.
Yeah.
No sense.
It was on for, seriously, it was on for like 6 or 7 years.
I know. I watched it.
Well, then you know.
That it's not funny.
Oh, right.
There were moments.
Right. That's all you need is a few moments here and there. You're all right. That's
and the
fine.
Name of that show is called First Look.
First Look.
And I love it. The woman's name is Ashley Roberts. She used to be a pussycat doll.
I don't think she's been replaced.
I think they're just doing some special stuff.
Oh. Because they've got, the last few weeks, it's been a guy doing whatever Ashley Roberts does. It's like the exact same show. It's like, it's the weirdest thing because they just took her out, put him in, and everything else is the same. But that's what it is. You've never seen that show, First Look? You got to watch it.
I'm just looking up Pussycat Dolls,
the whole time
American
you watch,
Girl Group and Dance Ensemble.
Yeah, remember them? I remember them.
Vaguely.
The whole time you watch the show, you're in like utter disbelief that you're watching it. It's the most amazing thing ever. Every minute of the show, you're going, I'm still watching it. I can't believe I'm still watching it. All right, we've got news coming up next, and then the Rude Book.
Yeah, you can introduce them now, because I already did the introduction.
I'm not
going
to be able to
top
your introduction. Stick around. More ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Kim, thank you so much for your news, and I just want to throw it out there that Steve Bertrand's 10 o'clock news was sponsored by the Yard.
I was going to ask you who sponsored Steve's 10 o'clock news. It's By the Yard.
By the Yard.
They did a good job. They did a good job. Wendy, without a doubt, this is the rudest time in the history of the planet. Everybody's rude to everybody. There's no end in sight. What are we going to do?
You're stupid.
Seriously? During a setup for a book? Really? Danny Wallace joins us right now. He is the author of the book, F You Very Much, Understanding the Culture of Rudeness. There's a picture of Wendy right on the cover.
No, there is not.
How are you, Danny?
You're stupid.
You're stupid.
I couldn't resist. I'm very rarely rude, but I heard it happen a couple of times. There.
Jump in.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, Danny, in my opinion, British people are not rude.
Ever.
Ever. They just won't hear of it.
Oh, it's a glorious country in which no one is ever rude at any time.
Right.
We're just as rude. That's kind of the problem. And you're right. I do think we are genuinely living at the rudest time in living memory.
What happened? What has become of us? Why is it taking this ugly, ugly turn?
I think there are plenty of reasons. I mean, chief amongst them, we're living at a time where everyone's got to have an opinion on absolutely everything at all times, and they have to share those opinions in as forthright a way as they can so that those opinions are heard. Everyone feels like they have to be heard on every single subject, even if they know nothing about that subject. And social media plays into that. We have to have our pithy opinions and broadcast them to the world. Reality TV has taught us that conflict is what will sell a show. Every variety show has to have a rude judge. Every columnist has to phrase things as rudely as they can in order, you know, to get more clicks. It's just this culture of having to offend, which is leading us, I think, down a very, very murky path.
I have to tell you, when I was growing up, my mom was a stickler to the manner rules. You had to say please and thank you. You had to know that the fork went on the left side, the knife went on the right. My mom was really a stickler to knowing that we knew how to act in public. I have to admit that we weren't very nice to each other at home, but when we were out in public, we sure had great manners, and my kids are like that too. You got to teach manners.
Well, good. Yeah, no, absolutely. You are, you know, you're taking those lessons that your mum taught you and realizing that they're lessons that work. We have all these unwritten rules, pleases and thank yous, and maybe just holding a door open for someone if you're able to, that help society run. It lubricates the day. It makes everything a bit nicer for everybody. And right now, there is this kind of attitude of, they claim it's honesty, right? They say, oh, look, I'm only being honest. I'm telling it like it is. I'm just saying what everyone else is thinking. And really, you have to ask yourself, if you're doing that, you know, is there a reason why other people are only thinking it and not saying it? And perhaps I shouldn't say it either. We're celebrating constantly this right that we seem to think we have just to offend people just because we can. And there's a place, obviously, for truth and honesty and saying what you truly believe. But when you're just saying things to get a reaction or to look smarter, then you don't look smarter. You just look rude.
Do you think that this is reflective of what's going on in the White House, Danny? Do you think that our country is saying, well, if the president can be rude, I can be rude?
I think absolutely. I mean, it's happened over here as well. You know, we had Brexit, which divided the country cleanly in two, and we suddenly had two teams of people who were kind of at each other's throats on social media and on, you know, talk radio and in the newspapers. And it was very, very easy for them to get angry at one another. However, when you have the most powerful man in the world who also happens to be one of the rudest, it sets a kind of cultural tone. It says to the rest of the country, this is fine. You can talk like this. So long as you claim you're only being honest or you're telling it like it is or you're railing against political correctness, you too can be as rude as me. And then a whole generation of people teach their children the opposite of what your mum taught you, you know? And then these kids grow up and they think it's all right. So it's kind of a rudeness time bomb that can lead to some very sort of dark places. It's not just about being rude. Science has shown us that rudeness has very, very detrimental effects on us personally, on our family life, on how we perform at work. And that's fine if you're just like, you know, you're a writer, you can just get over the rudeness. But tests have shown, studies have shown, that a surgeon, for example, becomes 50% less effective at his or her job when they've just experienced rudeness. So you'll be going under the knife, and if someone's been rude to your surgeon, suddenly they can't communicate in the same way, they might be distracted and pick up the wrong instruments, they can't resuscitate as well. So these have real-world impacts. So, yeah, I think that when the precedent is being set by a president, you know, his words have meaning and impact and a real effect on the lives of others.
I was just telling you, Bill, we had ordered some food at a place that we always go to, and the last three times have been subpar. So I told my husband, you know, you should just call and tell him, don't be rude about it, but, you know, maybe the manager would like to know. And my husband was really nice about it, and they sent us a coupon for a free meal. And we were just trying to say, hey, listen, this is our favorite place, and I feel like, you know, the last few times it's been going downhill. So if someone's just trying it for the first time, they may not come back. And everybody was nice. Don't you get more accomplished if you start by being polite instead of rude?
Yeah, absolutely, you do. And by shining a polite spotlight on rudeness is a very effective way of dealing with it, by not being aggressive, by not being disparaging. You know, your husband handled it correctly. There are moments in life where you meet someone and you can't understand why they're being so rude to you. There are many, many reasons for that. You know, maybe they just had a bad day. There is that as well. Maybe someone's just been rude to them. But, you know, it's been shown that also people who have authority but not status tend to be rude to you because they assume that you're going to be rude to them. So someone with enough authority to ask you to do something, but not enough authority to make you do it. So it's, you know, like the guy who's just trying to get along in the parking garage who needs you to move your car, or the people at the TSA, something like that. There tends to be a lot of rudeness in those situations because it all deals with respect. And what your husband did there was deal with the situation while being respectful. So everyone was happy. You got a free meal. They feel they've kept you as patrons. And, you know, the world's
a
nice place.
Yeah.
Danny, doesn't a lot of this boil down to the fact that we now live in a world where everybody's looking out for themselves, number one, and the rest of the world is number six or seven or eight or nine? It's way down the line. But everybody's putting themselves way ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, and that tends to happen more in cities, really. So in the old days, in smaller communities or for people in small towns and villages, there were real ramifications to being rude to someone. Because you might be rude to someone in the post office, but you knew you might see them half an hour later at the school gate. But in the city, we can afford to be rude because nothing's going to happen, really. We can be rude to the person we're buying a coffee from because we don't have to go back there. We can be rude to the guy on the bus because we'll never see him again. So we are taking those risks. But what we are doing is really risking just a feeling of civility, you know, and we need civility to have civilization.
Danny Wallace on the line with us. His book is called F You Very Much, Understanding the Culture of Rudeness and What We Can Do About It. Do you think people are rude and are unaware of the fact that they're being rude?
I think maybe some people haven't, maybe they don't care quite enough there's something called the looking glass self, which is we all do it every day. We look into the eyes of other people when we're talking to them, and we're sort of making slight judgments. We're trying to work out if they like us. You know, are we coming across well? Have I offended them? You know, is this going well? And the people who don't tend to do that tend to come across as rude. I mean, obviously, you've got sociopaths as well who just, you know, they just don't care.
Right.
But generally, I find you very rarely meet a happy-go-lucky rude person.
It just doesn't click, does it? Danny Wallace is our guest. His book is F You Very Much, Understanding the Culture of Rudeness and What We Can Do About It. We'll take a quick break and then more with Danny. That's coming up in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I really like to be nice. Can I just tell you that? I said this the other day. If you just see somebody and they're not smiling, if you smile at them, I guarantee you 9 out of 10 times that person will smile back, and then they'll remember it and they'll smile at someone later.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's a good little social experiment?
Nope.
Okay. Nope. You're so rude.
The book is called F You Very Much, Understanding the Culture of Rudeness and What We Can Do About It. The author is Danny Wallace. Danny, something you brought up toward the beginning of the show is still haunting me. You said something about television and how if you watch any of the shows like American Idol or The Voice, they always get one judge to just be rude. It's his Simon Cowell place to just be rude. If you watch any of the shows like The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills or Atlanta, almost all of those women, if not all of them, are just rude. So somebody who's ingesting all that entertainment, they're going to go, well, that's how life is now. If you see something you don't agree with, you just act that way and everything's fine. That's not how it should be.
It's not, and I'd like to take this opportunity on behalf of every British person to apologize for Simon Cowell and for sort of doing that. So I hope that's accepted.
Thank you.
But a lot of it is often to do with power as well, and we kind of respect rude people despite ourselves. We let them get away with it. We don't like them. We don't want to sit next to them at dinner. But we sort of assume that if they are behaving in that way, if they're breaking those rules, then somehow they've earned the right to do so, which is why we laud people like, you know, Simon Cowell, or it's why we vote certain people in. We kind of assume they must be doing something right, and yet the evidence is they're doing it all wrong.
Is it okay to tell someone, like, if you're on the phone with customer service somewhere or at a store, is it okay to say, you know what, you're being very rude to me right now?
I think so, but it depends on the tone of your voice. If it's sort of confrontational or passive-aggressive, you run the risk of really riling them up. The way rudeness kind of spreads means that when you are rude to someone, it's very often because something rude has happened to you, much like the smile you were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, you can choose which way to go. You can choose to spread the rudeness, or you can end the strain and choose to spread something nicer.
Danny, there's a phrase that's been around forever, the ugly American. It's the way that Americans are perceived by other countries. Do we lead the world in rudeness? Is America the place that if you have to close your eyes and think of somebody who's rude, do you just automatically think, well, it's going to be an American? They're always rude. Is that it?
If you'd asked me 2 years ago, I'd have said absolutely not. but yeah, I'm sad to say, as a man living internationally and looking in from the outside, you know, we're worried about you.
Yep.
But, you know, we think you'll be all right in the end.
Hope so.
We have a caller who is offering an explanation to maybe why we're so rude. Mike, this is Danny Wallace, the book F You Very Much. What are your comments?
Oh, hi, Mr. Wallace. Hey, great
Hello.
Show, long-time listener to both you, Wendy and
and Bill. Thanks,
when
Mike.
You guys are on your I know, Bill, yeah. Oh, generations have changed. You know, if you're born and raised in the city, let's say, you know, 25 years ago, you know what, somebody's not going to get away with being rude to you. They're going to have to own up to it. Or, you know what, you might grab them by the throat. You know, or it might get worse than that.
We need to bring back the days of grabbing people by the throat, Danny.
Well, yeah, it's a unique perspective.
Here, my kids don't understand it, although my kids are rude. You know, you get these 20-somethings who are out there who think, well, you know, I could say anything I want to somebody.
Well, and that's where social media has formed their new way of being, I think, Mike. I think you're right. It is a different era.
Well, it is a different era. But every once in a while, like, you know, you find somebody, or I'll find somebody, okay, who's off their meds for the day. and is looking to take it out on somebody. Well, you know, when they run into an old codger like me, who, you know, I'll tell you what, well, I'm not going to take it from you, and I'm gonna end it for you right now. You know, and then all of a sudden, wow, is their tree shaking. They're like, oh my God, this person, they're uncivilized. No, we're not the uncivilized ones. The people nowadays, the younger generation are, because they don't know how to just be respectful of people. You know, they're just, hey, you know, good morning, how are you? You know, when you quit hearing yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, you know, that's the end of it. And
Mike,
you don't hear that anymore.
You're absolutely right. We thank you so much for listening. That is true. No one is, respect is missing. Don't you think that's part of the problem, Danny?
Well, I will tell you and Mike something that will shake you to the very core of your being. While doing the research for this book, lots and lots of people would always say, well, it's the younger generation, it's young people, it's the way they've been raised. And yet, when I asked 2,000 people to describe the last time someone was rude to them and to describe the person who had been rude to them and how old they thought that person was, it was people between 35 and 45 who tended to be seen as the rudest. So I do think that, you know, generationally, we all kind of grow up thinking that the young generation don't have respect. And in my research, I mean, I found an old poem written about it, just saying, you know, the problem with society is that young people no longer respect their parents. And that was written by Plato. So it's something that just keeps on happening, and it's a habit we get into as we get older. And yet, the numbers that I found really said that it was a different generation entirely. It was people more like me and Mike.
Oh.
His name is Danny Wallace. The book is called F You Very Much, Understanding the Culture of Rudeness and What We Can Do About It. Danny, great to meet you. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
I very much enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Wendy and I are headed to the stream. You got two options. They're both pretty good. Stick around. More after this.